Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio. On RNIB Connect Radio.
A cracking start to the beginning of today's happy hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Claire Sisk here, and joining me is my co-host Paulina. We're bringing you lots of great things today, from chatting about travelling solo when you were blind to accessible dance classes. And a few more things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a delicious and actually quite nostalgic recipe from blind chef Kim Jae. We'll be also checking out what's happening in nature over the next month with nature guide Andy Shipley and, of course, his latest sensory reflections.
All sounds awesome, but first up, some music.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's the happy hour with Claire and Paulina. Now, how does blind adventurer Jonathan Abreu prepare for his solo traveling? Well, our Amelia Hilton finds out.
Jonathan Abreu has just returned from a trip to South Africa and is here to talk to us about his preparations and experiences of traveling solo as a blind adventurer. Hi, Jonathan. Can you tell us a bit about how you prepared for the trip?
For me, going to South Africa, there is familiarity because it's where I grew up and I've been quite a number of times. But traveling alone, and certainly since I've lost so much more of my vision, I'm now unable to see anything that's of any use. It does become sometimes nerve-wracking or a lot more planning involved. So obviously flights were booked and everything was sorted. Then most important is making sure that I've contacted the accessibility team on all flights that I'm going on to ensure that I've got assistance in all the airports, and making sure that I've got people who are going to pick me up, either taxis or friends, whenever I am exiting from an airport. And then obviously making sure I know where everything is packed and that I've got everything I need, especially things like battery packs. So it's really just, I suppose, the same thing that most people would go through, but having to pay a lot more attention to the detail of it.
How do you, on a travel day, make sure you feel comfortable and ready to go?
I try and get to the airport early so that I can make sure that there's plenty of time. With the airlines, I've made sure I also have all the contact details for the assistance teams, or as many as I can. On this trip, I flew British Airways out of Terminal 5. So I know that the assistance area is all the way at the far side, closest to the Cafe Nero as it is at the moment. And fortunately, my partner went with me to the airport and took me to the assistance area. I have had a bad experience. In the past, I've written and made contact with some of the more senior people within Heathrow Airport. And as a result, I had the phone number of one of the directors involved with assistance. So I got in touch with him, and he came to have a coffee with me before I actually went through to the airside. So I think one of the things I would always suggest to people is make sure that they get whatever info they can about the assistance team and how best to get help going through. All of that was done, dropped off my suitcase at check-in and got taken to the assistance area. And then something I've noticed over my years of travel is that often they'll leave you waiting in the assistance area before going through security for a long time. I've stopped allowing that. I insist, I say, I would like to go through, please get myself through security. So that's another hurdle out of the way. Pick up a coffee, and then you can go and put me wherever it is that you want to while I wait to be taken to the aircraft. Because that's a horrible part of the whole travel, is getting yourself through security and everything sorted in your carry-on. Normally when I get assistance, I'm taken onto the airplane first, ahead of most passengers. This time, at Heathrow Terminal 5, there's this whole big seating area for people who are seeking assistance. And they said they would wait until people started boarding to take me to the plane, which meant that by the time I got onto the aeroplane, a lot of people were already on. And as you know, when people are on the plane, there's lots of activity and trying to get yourself sorted. Whereas if you're taken on as one of the first passengers, it's a lot more relaxed and easy to get yourself sorted. So that was something that I did experience this time that I will do my best to ensure it doesn't happen that way in future.
And you're, alongside this trip, a very experienced adventurer and traveller. Do you normally have quite a big itinerary of plans?
If we're on adventure travels, one of the things I've learned over the years is not to have a long list of things to do and never try and see everything, because you'll fail. Rather enjoy the things that you do see. Know some of the important things you want to go and see, but make sure that you keep plenty of time for just enjoying where you are. Because so often when we go adventuring, it's somewhere either new or new in a country that you might have been to before. And for me, part of the adventuring is getting to know the country I'm in and the people, experiencing a bit of that. It's very much part of the experience for me. So there's always got to be time to smell the roses, sit and drink coffee, all of the things that, if you've got this long list of must-do things, you forget to add to that list. So that's my big thing for travel as well.
You've talked before a bit about the wonderful multi-sensory experiences you enjoy when you're travelling, and what is something that really distinguishes the UK from South Africa? Was there anything that stood out to you this time?
Certainly in Durban, there's the Indian Ocean, which is a big crashing ocean, big waves, and the sound of the sea and the smell of the sea, which is something that I don't really experience here in the UK. I've been to the coast here in the UK, but it's very different from the hot climate, big ocean country like South Africa. I think in Johannesburg, I was staying in a hotel on my own, a hotel I've never stayed at before. And I think how friendly people were and how helpful people were around the hotel. No matter where you go in the world, I find that people love to help. And this was no exception. This was just proof that if you explain to people the sort of help you need and are willing to accept their help, doesn't matter where in the world you are, what the culture is, you can get your help and meet interesting people along the way. I chatted with a number of the people who worked in the hotel and the shopping area where I was staying and learned so much from them. So I think that's always part of my travels, is learning and meeting and accepting help, because that's the way you get to chat to people.
And what's something that travel providers can do for you and for other blind and partially sighted people that would make travelling simpler and less stressful?
Listen, that's the big thing. Listen to us. We're the ones who know what we want. We're not all the same, but we are all able to tell you what we want. And for me, that's the big thing. So if somebody who is blind or partially sighted says, I'd like to go through security now, I'd like to stop and get a coffee, and by the way, I don't want to be in a wheelchair because it's my eyes that don't work, not my legs, listen to them. You know, we, as the blind and visually impaired travelers, we are the experts in sight loss. So we're asking for help. I'm very grateful that the services are available, but I do want to be treated with the, I guess respect is one word, but just the understanding that I'm somewhere because I know I can manage that most of the time and I know what I want.
And finally, what travel tips do you have?
Prepare. Make sure that you've got all of the things that you need with you so that you're not suddenly at a loss. Something as simple as a battery pack for charging your phone, or if you're going somewhere where either you're going to be out in the dark or in a place where sometimes electricity is not always available, get yourself a head torch. If you've got a little bit of vision, or even if you don't, but you're going to be needing help, if you've got a head torch, your hands are still free. So whether you're using a cane, holding onto somebody, or carrying something, your way is lit up because the head torch shows you the direction you're looking in.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jonathan Abro, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio to share some of your travelling stories and travelling tips.
It's my pleasure, Amelia. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks for that, Amelia. Do you know what? Traveling as a blind person is something that I always felt really apprehensive about, but the blind community is so amazing. Like one of my closest friends, Sassy Wyatt, Blind Girl Adventures, she does a lot of online content about accessible travel. She's just been on a cruise and this cruise ship is just completely accessible. They even give you a dedicated area for your guide dog to go to the toilet. How amazing is that?
Oh, wow. Would you consider doing a cruise ship? Have you ever done one?
No, I haven't, because I've always felt that they wouldn't be accessible to me. But watching her content, I'm like, well, I would love to do that now. And I think it just, when you see other people doing it, it just takes away that stress and anxiety that you have of thinking, oh, is this made for me? And when you see that someone else like you's done it, you're like, yes, I'm gonna go do that now. So yeah, I definitely want to do a cruise. Have you ever been cruising?
No, but listen, my dad and I have been talking about it for ages, and we both would want to, but like my mom gets really sick on the water.
And
my husband is not very like kind of warming up to it, but I think we would need to save up a bit of money, because you know, as most holidays, they're not that cheap.
No, and cruises, they do tend to be quite a lot. But what I love is once you're on board, everything's paid for, isn't it? So it's like you don't actually need any money. I quite like the idea. It's almost like a floating hotel.
Yeah, but it like gets moved to a new location every time you wake up. You're somewhere else.
That's exciting. I think that's quite weird in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I would love it. The one cruise that I don't understand is, why do people do cruise trips to Iceland? It sounds cold.
Oh yeah, I don't like being cold. But
I mean, I don't fancy looking at like glaciers or anything like that. That's just,
I mean, if I could see, I might like them, because I guess they're pretty. Yeah. But would people go there for the Northern Lights? Is that where the Northern Lights are? Maybe.
I mean, listen, if you're listening to us chat about this and you know the answer, please educate us.
Yeah. Let us know and tell us your reasons as why you would go to Iceland. I'm sure it is a beautiful, beautiful place though.
Or what cruise you would decide to go on. Like, where would you recommend a cruise? If you have some advice, both of us can happily take some.
Yeah, and so I guess locations for people with disabilities is a huge thing. Like I've always wanted to go to Venice, and my daughter went recently and she was like, there's just no way Rick the Stick would cope with those cobbles. And you're kind of like, oh, I really want to go.
And there's water issues as well, because some of the original square and locations can get flooded regularly as well.
Yeah, and they don't have like barricades along the canal, so
I mean, I guess you could go for a swim.
You could if you really wanted to. Right, all that talking about water. Here is Tears Dry on Their Own by Amy Winehouse. Once was the ride when we were at our height, waiting for you in the hotel at night. I knew I had him at my match, but every moment we get snatched. I don't know why I got so attached.
And now on R&AB Connect Radio, it's time to hear a delicious comfort food recipe.
Hi, I'm Kim Jay, and I'm a visually impaired chef, and I teach a lot of accessible cooking, and I volunteer for RNIB doing this. Now, one of my favorite all-time recipes is cheese and onion pie. I grew up in the 70s, and at the time, school dinners were awful. Boiled cabbage, sort of gravy that was curdling on your plate. But the one thing that I loved the most was cheese and onion pie. And nowadays, it seems to be missing on most menus. You get the odd cheese and onion pie, but they mix it up with potatoes. Now, my recipe is taken from the 40s and the 50s and slightly updated. I use 5 different types of cheeses. Now, you can use less if you want. It's totally up to you. It's a very simple recipe, very easy to do. Now, what you're going to need is 1 large onion, which you peel and slice very finely, 150 grams of mature cheddar grated, 100 grams of Cheshire cheese grated, about 150 grams of white Stilton, again grated. I always like a little bit of red Leicester because it's a bit punchy, so I always put 50 grams of red Leicester into that and 50 grams of grated mozzarella. I also have a packet of shop-bought pastry, one packet of short crust, one packet of puff pastry. Now, I prefer the ready rolled pastry because it's so much easier to use. And with that, you're also going to need a pie dish approximately 18 to 20 centimeters in diameter and a little bit of butter. Now, the first thing you do is you get your onion, you slice it very finely, put it into a pan onto boil, and you boil it for 10 minutes. You can boil it slightly longer if you want, but if you like it crunchy with a little bit of crunch, 10 minutes is fine. If not, for about 15-20 minutes. Drain the water off and allow to cool and set on one side. Now, the next thing you do is you get your pie dish and you butter your pie dish. So you want to butter the bottom, the sides. I also butter the rim. It helps the pie come out a lot easier. Now, once you've done that, set your pie dish on one side, get your short crust pastry and roll it out to the size of your pie dish and very gently drape it over your pie dish and just kind of slightly press into the corner so it fits perfectly into the pie dish. With the excess pastry that you have on the rim, sort of cut it off, leaving about 1.5 to 2 centimeters of overhang pastry. Now, with this pie dish, you want to put it in the fridge. Pastry is always best once you've rolled it out, put it into a dish, put it into the fridge, because it allows it to sort of not be as relaxed and it will cook much better in the oven. Leave it in the fridge for half an hour. Now you pull it out, and this is where the fun bit starts. You get your mature cheddar, sprinkle it on the surface on the bottom of your pie dish, sprinkle a little bit of black pepper, dot some of the boiled onions on top, then you put a layer of one of the other cheeses, again, bit of black pepper, sprinkle some onions, put another layer of cheese on it, and you keep doing this. So you've got a buildup of the layers of cheeses going on. Once you've done that, put the pie dish again into the fridge, and then you get your puff pastry and again roll it out so that it will cover the top of your pie. Once you've done that, pull your pie dish out of your fridge, cover your pie with your puff pastry. Now get a fork and just very lightly go around the rim and sort of either put the fork on the side so you kind of get a lovely crimping effect, and then get a pair of scissors and cut off the excess of the pastry. Now you can, if you want, coat the top of your pastry with either milk or one beaten egg just to glaze it. Put it into the oven at about 180 degrees for 35 to 40 minutes. And when it's done, it's beautifully golden on top. And when you cut into it, it is sheer comfort food. The cheese sort of melts together. The Stilton with the Cheshire and the stringy mozzarella. It is absolutely delicious. On Christmas, I always have a cheesed onion pie on the table. I'm vegetarian. Any sort of big holidays, out comes my cheesed onion pie. And if you want to make one or two, you can put them into the freezer uncooked and just pull it out whenever you need it, defrost it and put it into the oven. And that's my recipe for cheese onion pie. I hope you really enjoy making the dish, and I'm sure that you love it as much as I do.
Thank you so much to Kim for that delicious recipe. Now, if you would like to give Kim a follow, she's on Facebook at Kim J Cooks. You can also find her on YouTube, Kim J Cooks as well. And she also has a website. So if you search online for Kim J Cooks, you can find all those delicious recipes there. Or, you know, if you have any issues, get in touch with us. Our email is radio@rnib.org.uk. Happy cooking! There we go, Be My Baby and April Nats on RNIB Connect Radio, and it's the happy hour with Claire and Paulina. Now, Claire, obviously Kim had that lovely nostalgic recipe for cheese and onion pie, and it's something that she remembers from her childhood and growing up. Do you have a dish that you're extremely nostalgic about?
It's not so much a dish, but when we were younger, my mum used to work nights at Gatwick Airport, so it was like daddy daycare, and we used to love it because my dad would go and buy like those big baguettes, and he'd scoop out all the bread from the middle, and he'd cook some oven chips, soak them in salt and vinegar, and then like stuff them into this hollow crusted baguette. And it doesn't sound much, but at that age, I just used to love it. She used to call them specials. Now, my mum's South African, so I don't know if that's why they've got that name. But it's just basically a toasted sandwich with tomato, onion and egg. And I must have been about 5 years old, so to eat onion at that young. But they were delicious. How about you?
Wait, but like, is the egg fried? Or?
Yeah, like a fried egg. And I mean, I don't like egg, but in my mum's toasties, I would eat them.
I am going to have that. I love a good toastie. I've never had a toastie in my life with egg, and I'm a little bit obsessed.
You need to try it.
See, but to answer your question, I have a random childhood food obsession. I don't think I've ever, whenever I tell people I've had it here, everyone's always shocked. And as kids, you would get plain pasta noodles with blended either strawberries or blueberries, blended with some sour cream and sugar, and you got this almost like a sauce, and you would have it with your pasta, like a fruit pasta.
Do you know what I've just imagined? Have you ever seen the movie Elf?
Yes.
Where he puts syrup on his spaghetti bolognese. That is what I'm imagining right now.
Yeah, but like the noodles, when you don't salt them, they're very plain.
Yeah, I get it's a bit like a Yorkshire pudding. You can have it sweet or savoury. Yeah. I guess you could have it, yeah. I'm not going to say I'm going to try that.
It's a good summer food. So you would have your pasta cold and have all this like blended fruit with it. And it's like really fresh and like, you know, when you have fresh strawberries and fresh blueberries, yeah. It's just so sweet.
I'll take your word on it, but maybe one day I will try that.
It's a nice way of saying absolutely never.
I think because in my head it shouldn't go, but quite often when you think things like that and you try them, they're sometimes the most amazing thing you've ever put in your mouth.
That's true.
Right, and coming up, we're going to be hearing from a blind dance student about her passion for Bollywood dancing. And now one of my absolute favourites, who I'm going to see next month. I'm so excited. Harry Styles and Watermelon Sugar.
Tastes like strawberries on a summer evening, and it sounds just like a song. I want more berries and that summer feeling. It's so wonderful and warm. Breathe me in, breathe me out. I don't know if I could ever go.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Now let's chat a bit about dancing, as Amelia hears from a blind dance student about discovering a passion for it.
Amrit is a blind dance student who was part of the very first Step Change Studios dance programme and has since helped create and deliver training for fitness and dance professionals on how to teach in a way that's inclusive for blind and partially sighted students. How long have you been dancing, and what's your favourite style?
I've been dancing for a year since I did the Dance Dorsey program, and it's Bollywood dancing, so I loved all of the moves that we learned.
And what do you enjoy most about Bollywood?
It's just being able to move and be able to dance, because it's something that I've wanted to do all of my life, and found that I wasn't able to participate in any type of dance. Like when I used to phone up my local council to find out about classes that are running locally, they would always turn me away because they said that there was only one instructor. She wouldn't be able to give me the support that I needed in the class, and I'd have to bring someone with me, which I wasn't always able to do. So I felt really most of my life that the door was shut in my face, that I wasn't able to participate in dance at all. So when I saw the advert for the Dance Dorsey program, I have to admit it was a real shock to see dance and visual impairment on the same page together. And being South Asian myself, I was really pleased that, you know, it was a program where I would be able to learn sequences that I'd be able to do at weddings and celebrations and not feel out of place.
That sounds really beautiful, to be able to connect with other people and get involved in something you've been wanting to for so long.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it means more than what I can say, really. You know, it gets me quite emotional, like, talking about it. You know, when I would go to weddings, I felt completely isolated. People would come up to me and say, oh, you know, do you want to come up and dance? And I would say, no, I don't want to. But inside, I was so desperately wanted to get up. It's in my nature, like, to be active, and I associate dance with celebration and happiness. And it was really frustrating and quite upsetting for me that I couldn't get up and just enjoy the celebrations, you know, with everybody else.
And what kind of support or guidance do you find most helpful when you're learning new moves or practicing moves that you already know?
What I loved about the programme was that Rashmi and the instructors and volunteers all had a solid understanding of my needs as a visually impaired person. So all of the pressure was taken off. They know what my needs are in terms of how to guide me, that they need to describe the room, the space around me to make it safe and secure. The venue was accessible, because very often that can be an issue if I can't get somewhere. I was able to get there as well by taxi. Once we actually began the classes, it was the instruction of the dance teacher that absolutely made it possible for me to be able to dance without feeling self-conscious. That the instruction was so clear, I was able immediately to dance. They would come up to us and physically show us. The volunteers were by our sides to make sure that, you know, we're kind of working within our space and supporting us and encouraging us. So with all of those things combined.
You've also helped develop and deliver this training for dance and fitness professionals, so more blind and partially sighted people can get involved in dance. What were you hoping the professionals would take away from the sessions?
I think to have the confidence to know that with adjustment to what they already teach, that it is possible for visually impaired people to fully participate in dance and fitness. And it was fantastic. There was a good turnout and really excellent feedback. You know, they all really appreciated the advice and tips and demonstrations that we gave about how they can adapt teaching to make dance more inclusive for everybody. The biggest issue for me was that I was really self-conscious about whether I was dancing in the right way. And because of that, I wouldn't even attempt to dance previously, because I thought people, you know, would laugh at me. I was a bit apprehensive at first that, you know, are these going to be proper classes? You know, are we actually going to learn proper dance moves and sequences? And was very pleasantly surprised, like within the first session after warm-up, that we were moving straight into dancing. And I had a very new connection with my own body. Just having that freedom to be able to move, I felt fitter. My stamina increased each week, those days when I had a really busy day and I didn't want to go, but I went to the class and I'd come back even more energized. And it also impacted like the rest of my life, because it gave me a lot of confidence and a sense of achievement and motivation to do other things in my life, like, you know, look for work. So that's why it's really important for me to be part of this training program, so that other people can benefit in the same way.
And for blind and partially sighted people that might be in a similar situation to you a year ago, where they really want to start dancing but they feel nervous and apprehensive, what advice would you give?
Oh, I would say, you know, go along, give it a go, try it out. You know, if it's not for you, then you don't have to continue. But if you go to a class where, you know, the trainers have awareness of how to support you and you work with them, then you won't regret it. I certainly haven't.
And where can people find out more about Step Change Studios?
They have a website, Step Change Studios, where they advertise any upcoming programmes.
Well, thank you so much, Amrit, blind dance student and teaching programme developer from Step Change Studios, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much.
That was Amelia with that lovely conversation there. Now, I don't know about you, Paulina, but I have got no coordination, so I cannot dance, but I would love to be able to dance.
I'm the same, and I feel like in a way we're the triple threat of not being able to dance, not being able to sing.
We haven't got much going for us, have we?
You can at least, I think you said you can act, so you can at least do that.
Yeah, my dad always said I was a good actress, so I'm gonna run with that. I loved NSYNC, and one of their songs, Bye Bye Bye, had a really good dance routine, and for so many years I tried to learn that dance, and I just looked like I was, you know, falling out of a tree with the way I was dancing. It was just horrendous, but in my head I look good.
I mean, the only dance I can do is the Macarena.
That's impressive.
But it's like line dancing, so you're doing what everyone else is doing.
You see, I don't even think I could do that. I just don't have the coordination. Years ago when I used to go to Zumba, they would stick me at the back in the corner because I would just do my own thing. I think I was doing what everyone else was doing, but I just wasn't, and ended up in a table.
Oh my God. Wait, how?
I was just spinning around and doing what I thought they were doing, and then, whoop, there's a table there, Claire. I mean, I had sight back then as well, so I should have seen it.
Do you think if you picked up dance classes now, it would be maybe in a way easier because you wouldn't be so focused on what you look like when you're doing it?
Possibly. I have thought about that because you know, I think as well, when you can't see, you sort of, your other senses, you're very much more aware of them. So maybe I would be more aware of what my hands and feet were doing. Maybe that's something I should try.
And at least you don't have to face those ugly mirrors that you have, like ballet studio mirror on every wall, just to see you dance really badly.
They were hideous. I'd always catch my double chin in them and my bright red cheeks.
Oh, I always got really flush. I used to get so sweaty, and it was just my red face, and I would always like reverse gradually towards the back so I couldn't see myself.
Slowly reverse backwards. It's such an attractive
and
sight.
And then leave and never come back.
We're all the same.
Well, we are slowly nearing the end of today's show, but we do have a couple more things coming up, including our music therapy moment. And coming up after Video Killed, the radio star will be joined by Andy Shipley for this month's Sensory Reflections.
Welcome to episode 5 of Sensory Reflections with me, Andy Shipley of Natural Inclusion, on RNIB Connect Radio. This is episode 5, and we're going to be taking time out to listen to a few more sounds of nature and giving you one or two suggestions of things to do to help nature. This month, we're inviting you to keep an ear out for some sounds that were once very common but are becoming increasingly rare. And they're from animals that are on the red list of endangered species in the UK. So the first one going to hear is the song of the turtle dove. Sadly, the turtle dove is the fastest declining bird in the UK and is actually approaching extinction. but you can still hear it in low-lying parts of the country, usually where there's lots of woodland, and predominantly in the south, but also in parts of Wales as well. The second of our precious sounds is the song of the skylark. This is one to listen out for when you're walking near farmland. You'll recognise it by its cascading flow of tunes and phrases as it soars up into the sky, getting higher and higher. Skylarks can actually fly up to a height of around 1,000 feet. But with increasing habitat loss, this once signature sound of the countryside is rapidly decreasing. The third of our spring songsters is the curlew. As you can hear, the curlew has a particularly haunting quality to its song and can be found in wetland and grassland parts of the country and often near farmland, and is particularly prominent in the north and in coastal regions. It's quite a large bird, one of the largest of our wetland birds, with a wingspan of nearly a metre. And our final sound isn't a bird. See if you can guess what it is when you hear it. So not a bird, and something that lives much nearer the ground and is also much more prickly. That was the sound of a hedgehog, or in fact the sound of hedgehogs getting it on during mating season, and doing it very carefully, I'm guessing. So we have a few things you can do to help nature this time of year. It's a good idea to regularly refill your bird feeders at this time of year, and also maybe add fat balls and mealworms to the diet, because these will also provide a great extra supply of protein to growing fledglings. And it still isn't too late to put up nest boxes either. We have a number of migratory birds coming into the UK at the moment, including swifts, swallows and house martins. And these will all be looking for somewhere to move into to make a nest. And your swift nest box, swallow cup or house martin home could be just what they're looking for. You can find out more about building nest boxes for these birds on the RSPB website. Lastly, there are actually 70 species of bird under threat in the UK at the moment. If you'd be interested in helping to turn things around, though, the RSPB are inviting people to take a stand for nature and volunteer to do what they can to help reverse the decline in our spring songbirds. And again, if you want to find out more, you can go to the RSPB website. So that's it for this month. You can find out more about me and my work at www.natural-inclusion.org or email me at andy@natural-inclusion.org. So until next time, stay sensational.
And that is it for today's Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. As always, thank you so much for keeping us company today, and do join us for another show next week. Now, if you'd like to catch up on our episodes, you can find us. Where can they find us, Paulina?
Well, just go to the website. It's rnib.org.uk/connect-radio. Now, if that's too wordy, just rnib.org.uk, you'll be able to search for the Happy Hour there, and of course listen to the episodes with all the chat, all the music, and Claire and I just talking about how bad at dancing and singing we are,
and a lot more random stuff. Anyway, we'll let Kim play us out with the final track, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hi, it's Kim J, and the song that I always cook to is Put the Lime in the Coconut. Love to cook with it. It makes me happy, and I can do a little bit of a jig as I'm cooking.
You are listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you've enjoyed the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, thank you for listening to the Happy Hour podcast. Now let me get this straight.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.